Hello and welcome to the How to Money podcast. Join us as we take on the task of demystifying the confusing world of money and help kickstart your financial education journey. Just a reminder that everything we cover in this podcast is financial education only. We are not giving you any advice. If you do want personal advice, please make your own inquiries and do some research. Remember, it's your money, so take control. I'm Kate, your host, and today I'm here with my co-host Susan to really dive into how risk affects you as an investor. More specifically, what is risk? What are the different types of risks that you should be looking out for? And why you should be aware of your own tolerance to risk. Anyway, let's get straight into it. Hi Susan, welcome back to the How to Money podcast.
Hi Kate, good to be back.
Now today we were planning to dive into risk and the role risk plays in investing.
Yep, it's an incredibly important role and it affects everything we do. Kate, do you like hang gliding?
Nope.
Do you like bungee jumping?
Haven't tried it yet.
Skydiving?
Don't think I ever will.
Why not, Kate? They're fun, thrill-seeking type activities.
I tend to like my feet planted on the ground.
Because?
It's safer.
Safer. So would you consider those sort of activities risky?
Yeah, I think it's a risk level that's beyond me.
Yeah.
And my capacity.
And your capacity. And so a lot of people would think those sort of activities are risky. So why do you think they're risky, Kate?
Oh, I think the return just isn't there for me. The risk of dying just doesn't pay off.
Yeah. So you consider them risky because you don't think you'll get the return in sense of enjoyment and fun. And you think the likelihood of some sort of death or injury is quite high.
Yeah, and I just think I'd get up in the air and chicken out, so it'd probably be a waste of money too.
And a waste of money. Okay. So you automatically make these sort of quick calculations. What do you think I'd like? What do you think I'd get? The outcomes, the expected outcomes for me, and the potential downsides.
Mm.
So it's a risk calculation, and it comes into everything we do. We know driving a car is dangerous. People die every day. Hundreds die on our roads each year. But most of us drive a car. When we hit 18, we jump in and out of cars. It's still risky. There's still a negative outcome. But we're inclined to forget that because we see the positive returns.
Mm.
It gets me from A to B quickly, efficiently. It can carry my shopping in the back while I'm going. So we make those judgments all the time. And the same thing happens with shares. We make judgments which share we're going to buy, or whether we buy a bond or a bill or a term deposit, a share or a Bitcoin. So we make judgments about our risk and the sort of outcomes we'll get.
Mm. And we don't always make these judgments correctly.
No, or with any degree of accuracy.
Mm.
So bungee jumping, skydiving. You think the risk because of accidents. Do you know how many actually happen in Australia each year?
Not
do you
sure.
know what percentage of all the people that do go bungee jumping, skydiving, what percentage actually do have an accident, if any?
Mm.
No, but you might remember one story a few years ago, and that's in your mind. This person injured or died doing skydiving, so hence you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And yet we know people die on the roads and yet we still go driving, even if you're only a passenger. So it's very interesting how we'll equate the risk of something with also the necessity or the want to do it. And you've got to think about that. You'll often see when you're investing something that maybe in hindsight is quite risky or you should have seen the risk, but you want to do it.
You talk yourself into it.
Yeah. It seemed a groovy little share to buy or some little funny investment.
I mean, if you really want something, suddenly the return will look much greater than the risk. And if you're not too keen on something, the risks suddenly look a lot more than the returns.
Yeah. Yeah. So we always bring those sort of biases into our investment. So just remember that when you go forward, why some people might like one particular investment or share and you can't see the value or the outcome, and they can. And we come at it differently. So that's to be expected.
Yeah.
So think about your own self, what you like. Are you a risk seeker? What do you do in, you know, think about your hobbies. Are you a risk seeker? Do you like that thrill and excitement? Do you like, you know, rock climbing and skydiving? And does that come across to your investments and you're more a risk seeker in your investments? Perhaps, perhaps not. Or are you very timid about your own sporting activities and hence you may be quite more timid in your own investments?
Mm.
And sometimes we're parallel. We do have that same view on life.
Yeah, right? And some people are completely opposite.
Yeah, you don't do anything wild in your sporting life, but you might take a whole lot more risk in your investments.
Mm. Now let's dive a bit more into what risk actually is. So Warren Buffett has said that risk comes from not knowing what you're doing.
Well, I think risk is always there, but it definitely adds to all your problems if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. Now, how do you define risk?
Well, risk, I was always taught, was uncertainty of outcomes or variation from a mean. You can look at it mathematically. You can use a definition from the International Risk Standard, ISO 31000. Risk is a variation of outcomes. So there are a lot of views of risk, but mainly when we talk risk, and depending who you speak to, if it's accountant or auditor, risk manager, they see risk as negative, what can go wrong.
Mm.
Whereas others and traders in particular see also risk, yes, things can go wrong, negative returns, but you don't invest in something if you only see a negative return. You also see a positive return. So risk is equally about understanding and maximizing the positive return.
Yeah. If you're looking at it being the standard deviation from the outcome, then it could just as well be positive as negative.
So a good risk manager, if you like, is trying to, yes, minimize the downside, but maximize the upside or the opportunity.
I think in finance and investing, we definitely associate risk with the possibility of losing your initial investment. So
That's a good place to start.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't afford to lose that initial investment, should you be doing it in the first place?
Yeah.
Because, yes, it may double your money, but, you know, if it's 80%, it's going to, likelihood it's going to lose, within the 20% that it's going to double doesn't outweigh the concern.
Mm. And be aware in investing, there are some products that you can lose more than you start with. So that's definitely another kettle of fish and something I'd stay far away from when you're getting started.
What do we hear about today? 500-1.
Mm, leverage.
Yes. So always start off, how much can I afford to lose?
Mm. Now, Susan, what do you think about calculated risk?
Well, is that just another word of saying do your homework before you invest?
Where you understand all the risks involved rather than blindly going into something.
Well, please never think you understand all the risks involved, because there's always that thing that can sideswipe you. So you like to think you've got a good idea of most of the risks, but you do know there can be some risk out there that can still be totally unexpected, you know, that black swan type idea. Or they may be totally unexpected to you, but someone else out there knows all about it and is pulling the strings, and you're the bunny who is last in line and doesn't know it.
Which happens time after time.
Yeah. And the smaller little investors we are, the more likely that we are the last in line.
Yeah. You definitely don't get to hear about the inside information just as the investor on the street.
No. No. So calculated risk, that's what we plan to do. Look at investment, read the brochures, read the PDS if it has one, read your websites and say, okay, they're telling me the upsides, they're telling me, and they have to in certain products tell you the downsides. And they're not trying to lie to you, but they're obviously going to highlight the benefits over the negative. But even so, things can still affect people that they really didn't know.
There's countless individuals out there ready to tell you the rewards of a certain investment product or company, but it's often up to the individual to work out the risks.
Yeah, and it is, because it's how they view them.
Mm.
And that's why we talk, even when people talk about, you know, advice, you know, seek financial advice, it's still your perception of that risk. Mm. You know, as I said earlier, what you think is least risky, someone else could see extremely risky. And they don't know your personal circumstances as well. So people have to take that into account. They don't know if you're diversified, or maybe they're giving you advice to buy this really great share in a fintech, but if every other share you own is already in fintech stocks, it's probably not a good idea to have one more. So in terms of risk, we always want to calculate where we can, even if it's back of the envelope figures, because it really is hard to calculate everything out of the equation.
And what I think helps the individual investor getting started with understanding the different types of risks is actually having a look into the categories of risk that affect investors. And some of these will be noted maybe in the product disclosure statement if you're looking at an investment product, but some of them you're going to have to look at for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought we'd start there and have a little bit of a look into each of these. Okay, so let's start with systemic risk, aka non-diversifiable risk.
Yes, so that's the risk of the whole asset class shifting, and that's always there. Hence, if a recession comes along, the whole of the stock market and virtually every share you would own on the stock market would fall.
Mm.
So the only way to avoid that is not being in the stock market in total. But so there's some quite graphic times. A GFC was a good example of systemic risk, that an even move between countries and spread between, you know, America, UK, Europe and Australia.
Okay, what about market risk?
Well, market risk is one of those really big risks. So market risk is the risk usually that you'll lose money, but you can equally gain money due to movements in the market, i.e. if it's an interest rate investment, due to movements in interest rates, exchange rates, commodity prices or share prices. So most traders, we're looking to make money out of market risk, of movements in a share price.
And then what about political risk?
Political risk, it picks up all your changes in legislation, government.
I mean, at the moment, there's definitely some political risk.
Yes, so political risk changes in a government's whole government, so federal elections, state elections, that sort of thing. So always there, could be calculable or sometimes out of left field.
Liquidity risk.
Liquidity risk is what we call one of those financial risks. So market, credit and liquidity are in the group of financial risks. So liquidity risk, your ability to get in and out of the share price or the product, as well as the general liquidity of that class. And we've talked before that shares, the top 200 shares on the ASX, are the most liquid.
Mm.
And if you're a large fund manager, you usually don't go much beyond the top 300 because you've got liquidity issues. You can't get in and out your large positions easily.
And sometimes when everyone's panicking and trying to get out of a investment product or company very quickly, they're often, if companies do have liquidity risks, that can really affect you. Then when everything's good, it doesn't really matter too much. But suddenly you can't get your money out.
Yeah, or the buyers of the product disappear. Mm. So lots of sellers and no buyers. So it can be.
And even when times are good, sometimes there's massive liquidity risks with small companies listed on the ASX that have really small market caps. And it can be very hard to get out.
Yep. And also even some of the large ones, they can still be owned by a larger family or original founder who can own 40-50% of the shares, which makes liquidity very tight, which can do a lot to help keep the price going up. But if that major shareholder then starts selling, you could see great movement in the price.
And I mean, and property is a physical property is another good example of liquidity risk. If you need that money tomorrow, you can't get it.
No, and you can't.
It's locked up.
You can't sell the bathroom.
Yeah. Yes. What about information risk? I think that one's quite important to know as a new investor.
Asymmetrical information.
Yeah.
And basically that there's two parties meet to buy and sell, but one party knows more than the other.
Mm.
And that, unfortunately, will often be the case between a larger business or larger finance company to a smaller personal investor.
Mm, because people at these big companies talk.
Mm-hmm. And they go to the meetings and they have chats with management.
Yeah.
And
a lot of this isn't technically insider trading, but it's just extra information that the individual investor is not getting. And another part of information risk is that information available is actually incorrect. And so you're making an investment decision off incorrect data.
Mm. Oh, and that's a really big worry because you really don't know. And, you know, I've seen even chairmen and CEOs of companies come out and speak to you as the shareholder. And really, it turns out that, let's say, what they've been saying to prop up their company has been a bit of a furphy.
I mean, even recently, I've seen a few examples of companies push out stock exchange announcements and actually, just because of an employee error, put the wrong figure or add an extra zero and then have to come back the following day saying, we made a mistake, this is incorrect, but people have already started to make decisions off that new data. So that is a real risk.
Yeah. Luckily, it doesn't happen too often, but if you do get information like that, sometimes you do sort of have to wait and wonder and go, is that figure really true? Could there be an error? Before you jump on something too quickly. But hopefully that's not very often.
And I think also when you're a new investor, sometimes because you lack information, you can get taken advantage of. So I'm not sure if that technically falls under this category, but I do think it is.
Potentially. Or maybe if someone's trying to give you the hard sell, yes, you are potentially more at risk if you don't know. There's always if you don't understand.
If you don't understand the fee structure or something like that and you get sold into a product you don't quite understand, but I think that can be a risk. And another one I wanted to talk about was the opportunity risk. So often we talk about it as opportunity cost.
Mm. So, you know, I'm waiting for the stock market to fall before I buy in.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very impressed with those people, but they may be waiting quite a while. You know, trying to buy in at the right time. There's all sorts of quotes and figures. I think you've got some that say, you know, if you don't, most of us won't get the right timing, but it's been in the market rather than trying to pick the market.
So I think you're referencing a Peter Lynch quote.
So
far more money has been lost by investors preparing for corrections or trying to anticipate the corrections that has been lost in corrections themselves.
Yeah. So if you are looking to invest in the share market, it's better to be in there during both the highs and lows than sit on the sidelines and wait for that perfect moment.
Yeah, now it's a pretty silly phrase, but it's often said it's about time in the market, not timing the market.
Yeah. Yeah. And even if you get the bottom right, you know, then you've got to try and pick the top, which is, you know, even
higher. Even the best, richest fund managers in the world can't pick the bottom and the top.
No. So
they might become famous for picking one market crash, but they haven't picked it the second time.
Mm.
So, Susan, do you think there's a point at which taking on more risk when investing does not mean higher returns for the investor?
No, it's not a straight line. You can't just sit there and say, this little bit more risk will give me this little bit more return. It's not simple, and you don't know how much more risk you're taking on, and especially new products and new areas or new industries. You don't know if they're going to boom. Afterpay is a good example, a new industry for most people. People would have seen that as a very risky company. Mm. Others would have seen that as, getting into new areas, a new way of doing something, really changing the market, and had great potential. Yes, it had risk, but they saw the upside potential. So some people would have suited their portfolios and brought in early, and other people would have held back and went, we'll watch and wait and see. Oh, there's legislative changes, change in the marketplace, too many bad debts, and wouldn't have invested. So, you know, they both would have had fairly good arguments of why or why not they did things.
Mm. And I think sometimes it works the other way around as well. You think you're investing in a lower risk product for what you think's lower returns, but the product's actually can be just as risky as some of
They can have AAA products, can have all sorts of things at times. And during the GFC, just because it's AAA, it had some very high risks buried in it.
Yeah, so if it's got low returns and you think, oh, maybe low risk, it's not always the case. Yeah. I mean, even like hybrids, sometimes people say they're sort of a low to medium risk, but they can be pretty risky.
Yeah, and unfortunately there's been cases where people have deliberately lowered the returns to attract investors thinking that will hide the risk in the product.
Mm.
So please don't just assume a low returns, hence it's a low risk product.
Yeah.
So that rule about risk and return, it works perhaps in the areas of a government bond. You're going to get a low return because it's highly rated,
heavily back,
you know, term deposit of the right financial institutions, those sort of things. But once you move out of those nice basic core things, it then becomes very interesting how much risk you're taking on and will the return justify it. And some people require higher returns than maybe you. So, again, it comes back to what is our risk tolerance.
And I think it's important. It's sort of a good mental check. So if someone's promising you 30% returns in a year for some amazing property development, I hope you just think in your mind, what am I getting? What are they getting? How are they promising this? And what are the risks?
Yeah. Let's not go into property development because that's a whole new ball game and outside our scope, I think. But as always, if someone's promising any return, I guarantee you're going to make all this money, I get very wary because I go, why do you need to promise me something if it's just a good...
If they're giving you those kind of returns, what are the risks?
Yeah, I had a financial planner guarantee me, I guarantee you, you'll get 25% per annum. And I thought, how can you guarantee me that when you don't run this fund? It's a great international fund, but it's interesting. We're still trying to guarantee facts and figures in this day and age. So, again, it's no...
I'd be wary of anyone saying
crying over spilled milk and say, he guaranteed me this money or she did.
Unless it's a government-approved, authorised deposit-taking institution.
Mm. And again, what is the guarantee? Is it up to just $250,000 or is it some unique guarantee? And who's doing the guarantee?
Mm.
Is it guaranteed by Joe Smith down the road? Or is it guaranteed by a government? Is it guaranteed by an insurance company? If so, which one? What's their credit rating? So just the word guarantee doesn't help you.
No.
No. So, again, I hate to say it, but you've got to do your homework.
Yeah. And after looking at all these risks, why would an investor actually even think about putting their capital at risk? Because there's just so many risks out there.
Yeah, there is. But, okay, if the investor doesn't like to undertake that risk journey, and they may not, you have to fall back on term deposits and cash in the bank and government bonds. But it's definitely relatively safe in the spectrum of things. But, as you know, 2.5%, 3%, that sort of thing. Now, if inflation stays low, you'll get some return, but as soon as inflation kicks up and you're still only getting your 2.5%, if the rates don't move quickly, you'll actually be behind inflation.
Mm.
So that is a really serious economic risk there. But also, I suppose if you're listening to this podcast, it's because you're trying to earn or make a bit more than your 2 or 2.5%. And it's a way of boosting your returns. As always, you only want to invest what you can afford to lose, but it's a lot more interesting than leaving your money in the bank.
And I think definitely when you're an investor getting started, you should start to think about your own tolerance to risk. And by learning about some of the different risks involved, and then when you're having a look at a product, having a bit of a think about what are the risks, what are the returns, it will help you become a bit more comfortable with what you're doing.
Yeah, and you know, to be honest, it's also good to lose some money because it reminds you how easy it is. And
we've then both done that a few times.
Yeah, all the good lessons that you taught yourself and you forget over the years a bit because things are going smoothly, and then you bring yourself up because, you fell into a trap and you lost some money. So No matter how often we do it, we can still lose money. And in hindsight, we go, we should have known better. Mm. We should have researched that, or we should have asked that question. So I think losing a little bit is good if we can learn from it.
Mm.
And take ourselves to task a bit and go, okay, why did I do that? Did I fall for the sales talk? did I believe the hype? Was I just convinced that I'd found something that was too good? Not too good to be true, but I thought had reasonable risk and return. But again, the risks were greater than were shown. And so it's always a journey. And yeah. I think to say we know it all is we can never say that. It's a journey, and if you really don't want to do the homework, then seriously think about the type of investments you want to stay in.
Yeah, because you want to be able to sleep at night, and you don't want to do something you're not comfortable with. But educating yourself about some of these risks and learning about your personal finances does give you a lot more comfort when you are getting started with investing. And at How To Money, we definitely believe in making those mistakes yourself and learning from them.
Yep.
And not abdicating full responsibility for your finances to someone else.
Yeah, because then they're learning with your money.
Mm.
And that's really a sad thing. They've got the experience and you've suffered the loss. So remember, it's your money, and the only person who really, really wants to take care of it is you.
So I think that about wraps up our really brief episode on sort of the risk and the role that plays in investing. And it's something that really will thread through all of our episodes and everything we talk about at How To Money, because risk is a big part of investing, and every product we talk about will have associated risks. So I definitely think it's a good starting point. And if you have any questions or comments after this episode, please send them to us at howtomoneyaus@gmail.com. or find us online at howtomoney.online. Otherwise, we'll see you on the next How To Money podcast. You've been listening to the How To Money podcast.